to the Bergdahl questions, was this the right deal?
The president needs to look the American people in the eye and explain to the American people why he was justified in releasing the five individuals and why their background didn't demand and mandate that they be detained at Guantanamo for an indefinite period of time.
We'll talk about criticism of this prisoner exchange from Congress, Senator Saxby Chambliss of Georgia there, and other Republicans with Todd Zwillick in just a moment. But first, other soldiers now say they are free to speak about something they were prohibited to talk about while Bergdahl was in captivity. Bergdahl was no hero, caught in the heat of battle, they say, but someone who wandered off deliberately, possibly trying to hike his way out of Afghanistan, technically a deserter. The Secretary of the Army, John McHugh, says all of those claims will be investigated. Nathan Bradley Bethay was serving as an infantry officer in the U.S. Army from 2007 to 2014. He's out of the Army now, but he participated in the initial attempts to retrieve Sergeant Bergdahl in the summer of 2009.
I don't think anybody would say an American soldier should not be rescued if the opportunity presents itself. I firmly have the belief that it is a good thing that Bergdahl was brought back, and I want him to be able to be back in the United States. I think that in his case, the frustrating part of it has been that we haven't had the ability to talk about what actually happened. And as a result of that, the unit wound up looking very shoddy because of the fact that the story getting circulated in 2009 was that he had lagged behind on a patrol and then he had been captured because we weren't paying attention effectively.
Mm-hmm. Let's talk a little bit about what a lot of people who are listening to this might be saying to themselves. People who have read accounts of what happened in Afghanistan, and that sometimes soldiers are deployed to forward operating bases that are in valleys where they're basically target practice for Taliban soldiers and for Al-Qaeda soldiers, and that it's a very, very terrifying, difficult situation to be out on the edge of wilderness in Afghanistan, so cut off from even air support. Desertion might be a rational response to a situation like that. How do you respond?
You know, Bergdahl could have sat on the ground and said, I refuse to fight, and they would have eventually transported him back to the United States, and that wouldn't have put thousands of people's lives at risk. If a guy, either because of psychological dysfunction or because of ethical difficulty with what the job requires, decides he can't do it anymore, that's one thing. I mean, I've seen soldiers who after having enlisted and then facing a deployment, say that they are conscientious objectors. The response to the stimulus, to the stress, to the fear is one thing. But the problem is that because we don't leave anybody behind, doing this wantonly creates a situation in which we have to go and expend energy to recover him. And we don't disagree with the idea that he must be recovered, but it's frustrating to not acknowledge why does he need to be recovered? What is it that he did that got him into that situation in the first place? And I mean, you know, I left the Army out of a variety of reasons, but one of them was I was very frustrated with what I saw, how the war was going. And to be honest with you, that's a decision he could have made, but he walked off into the night and thereby required people to go and chase him down in a place as dangerous as what you just described. And thousands of guys had to go search for him unsuccessfully and in the process got hurt. And honestly, I believe there were cases in which guys died because of what was going on, you know, what they were subjected to in that search.
Do you know some of the people who were injured or killed in that search?
I do. I know of the names of two guys that were killed in an attack on a large outpost, or a small outpost on the border with Pakistan. It was the sister battalion in our brigade. That was their area. There was a huge kind of human wave attack that took place on July 4th, 2009. And everybody that I know in that unit claimed that they were unable to receive air support for quite a bit of time, longer than normal, because of the fact that all the air support in theater had been reallocated towards trying to rescue Bergdahl. I also remember helping guys off an aircraft that had been wounded in the search for Bergdahl in early July 2009. In my own battalion, there were guys that died around the time of the election, and some of the guys that died definitely were actioning targets that were in some way related to Bergdahl. They were chasing after Taliban sub-governors that were supposedly affiliated with the guys who were holding Bergdahl and could potentially give information, or they were, you know, searching the area. They were checking in the villages around where he had disappeared, but it was a very different climate around the election. We were still doing missions to chase down Bergdahl. It wasn't the massive overwhelming focus because by that point they knew he was in Pakistan. So to answer your question in the shortest way, absolutely yes.
Nate, do you believe the Army covered this up, that this is basically a top-down cover-up of something that really conceals facts that put you and some of your men in jeopardy?
I think that it was always understood that Bergdahl was going to have to be traded at some point once he was guaranteed, you know, he was known that he was a prisoner. And the Army understood that telling the truth about what happened could potentially damage his value as a prisoner. And I also think there's a lot of people that were just embarrassed by what happened, people whose military careers might be, you know, poorly reflected given that this happened. And as a result, before we left, everybody in the brigade was told to sign a non-disclosure agreement saying we were banned from talking about Bergdahl basically ever. It said everything related to the efforts to recover him were classified secret, and we weren't allowed to talk about them to anyone, certainly not in any kind of written or social media form. And if anyone in our families had any question, they could direct that question to the Operation Enduring Freedom Public Affairs Office, which is effectively to say your family can call Afghanistan if they want to. They can call someone at Bagram to get the story. It was intended to stop people from spreading it because I think it was embarrassing.
Didn't stop you.
It didn't stop me because I knew that he's back. There's a lot of politics wrapped up in this right now. And I know a lot of people that are, even some of the soldiers are far more extreme in their views towards Bergdahl, what they think should happen to him. But I want people to know what happened. At the same time, I am absolutely thrilled that he's back because it bothered me. It was a thorn in my side, in my conscience, in a sense, that one last guy from our unit was still there, was still in their custody. I'm happy that he's back. There shouldn't be American soldiers left to be POWs just because it's politically inconvenient. We should bring them all home, is my take. But he got himself in that mess by his own volition.
Nathan Bradley Bethay served as an infantry officer in the U.S. Army from 2007 to 2014. He's now retired from the Army. The status of Bo Bergdahl and the circumstances of his capture and the secret deal that released him are rapidly becoming the latest sparring opportunity for lawmakers on Capitol Hill. Todd Zwillick, Takeaway Washington correspondent, joins me now. Welcome, Todd.
Hi, John.
So let's start it off with the Senator John McCain, who really says something that I have some questions about, and I'd love to talk to you about it here.
I think we should continue to seek, we should have certainly made efforts to bring Bergdahl home. But this price is higher than any in history. And yes, I know about exchanges of prisoners and all that. I have never known of an exchange of prisoners that involved this kind of individuals, these five, who are wanted for war crimes.
At the risk of getting my email, you know, inbox filled with hate mail. I mean, doesn't John McCain have a little compassion here? I mean, he was a POW. He was, you know, forced to make a statement against U.S. Government under torture, and he came back to the United States. And, you know, why can't he just accept this situation here? What are his principal strategic questions?
This is exactly why everybody goes to John McCain with these questions, because he has been in sort of both positions here in a debate like this. John McCain, along with several other Republicans, John, have principled objections to this deal because of what they say is the high value for the Taliban of the detainees who were released in exchange for Bo Bergdahl. Now, there are other questions about Congress being informed and who knew what and when people were told, and maybe we can get to a little bit of that as well. But McCain's primary objection here is that the deal doesn't keep these five off the battlefield. They go to Qatar, where they will be monitored by the Qataris for a year. And then, according to McCain and others, it's back to Afghanistan. And he says, you can bet, and I'll bet you right now, that they're back in the fight against the United States.
But they've been at Gitmo since 2002. I mean, they've been out of the game for a while here.
That's true. I think part of the conflict that you hear on Capitol Hill right now, and there's a lot of criticism from both sides of the aisle, by the way, about this decision on this prisoner swap. A lot of the conflict that you hear is similar to the conflict that Nathan Bethea just related to you, that soldier who was in Bergdahl's unit. Happy that he's home. He should be home because you don't leave somebody behind, so you go and get him. Conflicted about the nature of the deal, conflicted about the nature of his service. And some Republicans have gone as far as to say this deal should not have made. We're happy for his family, but he should still be in captivity because this deal should not have been made.
You know, one of the things that's come out of this discussion here is McCain said something. I don't know if he said it to you directly yesterday, that McCain has no confidence in the chairman of the Joint Chiefs of Staff right now. He literally said he has no credibility with me, and I've dealt with many, many, many of them. Yeah. What's he talking about there?
He did say that to me directly, John, and that was when I asked him, when McCain said it's ridiculous to release these five prisoners, I said, well, Chuck Hagel, the defense secretary, and the chairman of the Joint Chiefs of Staff have certified in writing that these five prisoners released in exchange for Bo Bergdahl do not pose a significant security threat, and that in that sense, it's a safe deal to make. And McCain turned to me and said, that's a crazy assessment. Martin Dempsey has no credibility with me. He has a problem with Dempsey over his assessment of intervention in Syria, and thinks that Dempsey sort of politicized it and carried water for the White House. I think it goes back to that.
Oh, that's a major piece of news you got there, Scott, Todd. So can Congress do anything about this?
Well, there's going to be hearings for sure, and there may even be some closed hearings for senators on the nature of the notification here. Look, Saxby Chambliss, who we heard from at the top, who's the senior Republican on the Intel Committee, says he's going to demand that the White House declassify the files on these five Taliban fighters, that they call them Mullah Omar's cabinet, so that the American public can see whether they're dangerous or not. I don't know if the White House will comply with that. Next move, there's going to be hearings on the Hill, John, I'm sure.
Todd Zwillick, take away Washington correspondent. Thanks as always.
You bet.